2. That day had left Turl feeling very optimistic. It had gone off just like he knew it would. Someone, sooner or later, was going to get teleportation in operation again on this planet, and with what joy he had found that the animal himself was taking an interest in it. Turl was a highly trained security chief, the best by his own admission, and he knew all about teleportation. All about it. When the animal went over to the Chamco Dome, Turl had even pleasantly waited for the shots. They came. Turl was of two minds about the outcome. He was very pleased there was a fight and that the Chamcos had reacted exactly as predicted, and at the same time he was disappointed the animal had only received a scratched face. It was a difficult emotional conflict to be glad the animal had shot up the Chamcos successfully, and to be unhappy to see the animal still hobbling around alive afterward. Well, one couldn't have everything. He waited for 2 days for the news that the Chamcos had committed suicide. It finally came to him through the stupid cadet who visited him of an evening. Practicing talking a language required having something to talk about, and so Turl got lots of news. "You know those two cyclos that used to work over in that dome?" said Lars, talking through the barrier and bars. "Well, they put them in a cell down in the dormitory area. And this afternoon, despite a great deal of precautions, the two hung themselves with their chains. Over a crossbeam. They broke their chains apart and made a pair of nooses with them, and they hung themselves. They could have escaped, maybe, but instead they simply strung themselves up."
"No," said Turl, pretending he didn't expect just that. "The poor fellows must have been hurt terribly badly by the animal. I saw it from here. He just stood there and kept firing into them. When a cyclo is hit too badly and knows he can't recover, he is likely to commit suicide."
Which was about as far from the facts as Turl would allow himself to stray, without breaking down laughing.
"They're giving the sentry and the guard sergeant drumhead court-martials," said Lars. "Probably send them back to Scotland. They're Argyles. Clan Argyle, that is."
Turl clicked his fangs in sympathy over this gross injustice, and said so. Lars could agree how unjust authorities could be, but he mustn't go too far.
"There's someone here I'd like you to meet. He's very important, a senior council member. I won't mention his name. He's standing over in the shadows under the pole. Do you see him?"
Turl had seen him the instant he took position over there. He said,
"Where? Oh? What's a senior council member?"
So Lars, it was great practice for his cyclo, filled him in on the whole political background that was now functioning. And Turl said, well, certainly he'd talk through his friend, the cadet, to this very important official. It would be glorious practice for the cadet's cyclo. So, using a couple of mine radios, Brown Limper said the glaring lights in front of the cage hurt his eyes, and he had had a fever lately, a considerable amount of conversation occurred with Lars in the middle. Turl gave the politician a lot of very good, factual data. The cyclos were actually a peaceable people, interested in commerce, and here only in mining. A disaster had occurred 1,000 or so years ago that made it possible for the cyclo company to move in. No, he didn't know what caused the disaster, probably some natural cataclysm. The company had tried to save all the people they could, but the inhabitants misunderstood their intentions and hid from the peace missions and rescue teams, and the company, being only a commercial company and not political, had been quite poor and unable to continue with the financial burden of rescue since profits were down, and so the whole thing had gone on. Yes, well, he could say that this animal, Tyler, had provoked a crisis. Rash? Well, yes, come to think of it, pretty rash. Wild, too, he knew. He had tried to befriend him, and now he, Turl, was in a cage, without trial, too. But of course his feelings of guilt and desire for repentance were the real reason he wanted to be in the cage. This animal, what did you say its name was, Tyler? He didn't know it had a name. It was very secretive, bad-tempered, in fact. Well, Look what he had done to Turl's two best friends just a couple of days ago, and they had been so badly injured they had now committed suicide. Oh, indeed, the Cyclos were very peace-loving people. Honest, kind, good to their friends, trustworthy. He himself made it a rule of his life never to betray a trust. What? Oh, yes, it was too bad this animal Tyler didn't have the principles and morals of a Cyclo. Yes, he agreed, someone should have taught him to be honest and upright when he was young. Oh, no, the Cyclos would never think of counterattacking. They weren't a military nation, and Intergalactic was only a mining company, only interested in struggling along and staying at peace with the universe. Badly misunderstood people, the Cyclos. After they left, Lars was very gratified at all the Cyclo practice he had had, and the shadow under the pole was seemingly desirous of further conversations. Turl hugged himself enough to crush his rib bones. He would get off Earth, that was for sure. His plans were really sparking. What a lucky break. He would have made it without the break, but how easy it all became. He was not only going to get home to his gold, he was going to blow this planet out of the sky. And he was going to take a prisoner with him. They had air chambers on Cyclo. They could question a captive from almost any system for weeks. And very painful weeks they were. Yes, he'd take a prisoner. Not this silly cadet who knew nothing. Not that crooked, self-serving politician who was too crap-brained to know valuable information from trash. Not the animal Tyler, since he could be awfully dangerous. Well, maybe Tyler, if he had no success with anyone else. But it better be somebody else, somebody who would know all their plans and military preparedness. Who? Turl was hugging his ribs to keep from laughing with delight. He didn't want the sentry to log something about his conduct. Maybe the sentry would think he had a stomachache. Oh, it was too much. His professors were absolutely right. He was easily the greatest officer they had ever trained. The laughs finally erupted from him, but the guard had changed by then, and the new sentry thought he was just being more insane than usual. There was nothing in the log except that that cadet had been there for a routine visit to practice talking Cyclo. The new sentry walked about. He had an odd feeling of foreboding. Had the summer night turned cold? Or was it just that insane laughter from the cage? 3. We, said Johnny, are going to Africa. Dr. McKendrick looked up from his task of removing the cast from Thor's arm, a little startled. All the wounded Scots but Thor had left the underground hospital. Thor's arm had had to be rebroken and set, but now it was fine. And with Thor gone, the hospital would be empty save for Johnny. Dr. Allen had returned to Scotland to care for his practice, and Dr. McKendrick had been thinking of doing so as well. As he finished cracking off the cast, Dr. McKendrick said, "We?" "Yes," said Johnny. "You are a bone man, but you are also a neurosurgeon, I think they call it." Dr. McKendrick looked at the tall young man standing there leaning on his cane. He liked this young man. He liked him very much. His practice was being run at home by a competent young doctor, and he supposed that arrangement could continue. He had thought a little vacation might be appropriate before taking up his tools in the Aberdeen cave. But Africa? Thor was flexing his arm, looking very pleased. McKendrick told him all about what exercises he must now do to keep his muscles from collapsing. It looked like a pretty good job of bone-setting this time. Johnny beckoned, and McKendrick followed him as he hobbled into a sick room Johnny had been using as an office. An old operating table was covered with papers, photographs, and books. "I need some dead Cyclos, and I need some live Cyclos," said Johnny. Thor in the doorway laughed. "I shouldn't think you'd have any trouble with the dead ones. There's nearly 1,000 somewhere around the compound." "Sorry," said Johnny. "They dump them in a mile-deep mine shaft, and the shaft is so shaky it's a risk to fly down it. I've spent the whole last week looking for dead Cyclos." "There is the Chamco Pier," said Dr. McKendrick. "Sorry again," said Johnny. The council, for some reason of its own, had the bodies burned.
Just what is the problem here? Said Dr. McKendrick.
You ever stop to wonder why the Intergalactic Mining Company always shipped bodies home? They don't want dead cyclos lying about.
The parson, said Thor, put up the pair we found in the plane.
He wasn't looking for what I'm looking for, said Johnny. Dr. McKendrick smiled.
Autopsies on dead cyclos.
Johnny, it wouldn't be a full day unless you astonished me with something.
He was referring to an incident a week ago when he was sewing up Johnny's cheek. The needle had been a little dull, and Johnny, in reflex, had reached up with his right hand and gripped his wrist to make him ease off. McKendrick had felt a bit contrite about the arm and leg. He had feared that he might have injured something when he operated. But the sudden movement of the arm and hand had told him that it was a matter of getting back into communication rather than physical damage. Johnny had tried to do it again voluntarily and couldn't.
Must be like learning to wiggle your ears, Johnny had said. All you have to do is find the right muscles to pull and how.
McKendrick supposed he really should stay around and help Johnny recover.
Well, said McKendrick, motivated more by the possibility of being able to help Johnny's arm and leg than by any real interest in autopsies on dead cyclos.
I guess I could go along. But way, Africa?
Johnny smiled and beckoned Thor nearer.
There's a live, operating, untouched cyclo mine there.
Thor gasped.
We missed.
It isn't a full-fledged mine site. It is a branch mine of the central mine site near what used to be called Lake Victoria. Here. And he showed them on the map. Over to the west of there, way deep in jungle, there was, and is, a tungsten mine. The cyclos are mad for tungsten. He circled an area. All this is jungle. On the pictures, it looks like tall, tall trees, making a total umbrella. Thousands of years of growth. A recon drone doesn't even penetrate into that vast area of swamp. We chose our targets from recon drone maps. And yes, we missed. It's my bet they're still sitting there listening to the strange chatter on the pilot planetary, keeping their furry cyclo heads down and waiting for a chance to break out.
Thor smiled.
That's sort of grim, Johnny. We go down and shoot them just to get some dead bodies?
I don't want just dead bodies. I also want some live ones. There's a graduate engineer or six at every mine site.
And what, asked McKendrick, are these autopsies supposed to show?
I don't know, said Johnny. So will you gather up your scalpels and come along?
You're not telling me everything, said Dr. McKendrick.
Well, as a matter of fact, said Johnny, I'm not. This is very secret. We will state we are going to make a tour of some tribes, and if you go, Thor, you can even visit some, and pretend to be me the way you used to at the load.
This sounds very hush-hush, said McKendrick.
It is, said Johnny.
Johnny had not liked the way things were going with the council. It was passing lots of laws. One couldn't keep up, and he wasn't invited there anymore.
And you're trying to solve, said McKendrick.
Why the Champcos committed suicide, said Johnny. And why he was making no progress trying to untangle the mathematics of teleportation. For a week now, he had been going round and round and getting nowhere. He didn't know exactly what he was looking for, but it had to be there, whatever it was.
So, Africa? Said Johnny.
Africa, said Thor.
Well, Africa, said Dr. McKendrick.